the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest-running podcast now in our 16th year. This week, the GGB Podcast sits down with Kent Young, the president of Spin Games, who talks about the acquisition of his company by the Bragg Gaming Group and what it means for the future. The GGB Podcast is brought to you by IGT's Peak family of cabinets, performance-driven and player-tested across the board. Find out why operators bank on the power of the Peak at igt.com/peak. Kent Young has a long history in gaming. He worked for Aristocrat Technologies for 6 years and later moved on to lead Aruze Gaming America for 2 years. In 2012, he founded his own company, Spin Games, and developed a remote gaming server for slot games online, just as online gaming was starting to take off in the U.S. Earlier this year, Spin was acquired by Bragg Gaming Group and will join a company expanding aggressively in the U.S. and around the world. Young spoke with me at G2E in October. Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. Our guest today is Kent Young of Spin Games. Kent, it's great to see you again. It's been a while, and you know, we've known you for all your careers, all your different careers.
Yeah.
And I thought you were going to be done with another one here with the purchase by Bragg Game, but it looks like you're still involved.
Yeah. No, I'm sort of part of the sale, so to speak.
Okay. Yeah.
Roger. So I'll be staying on with the company, which I'm actually very excited about.
Yeah.
It's a sort of a new chapter,
sure.
In both my book and the company's book.
Right.
It's very exciting. Got terrific future together, I think.
Yeah. I understand. Richard Bragg is Richard Carter is pretty dynamic. You know. So the deal was done in May. So what was the attraction for Bragg to get Spin Games?
Yeah. So Bragg has primarily been operating in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the Bragg acquisition strategy, they acquired a company called Oryx, which has got a very good position in the European market, excellent technology.
Mm-hmm.
So they really wanted to work out how they'd get into the US and how to expedite, you know, taking advantage of the opportunity, the growth opportunities, obviously, as we're all seeing in the iGaming space. So Spin, as you know, Roger, I think, you know, we have multiple licenses, we have multiple distribution points, so we operate with all the key operators.
Mm-hmm.
So really it was a very good fit in terms of them being able to come in and acquire an already set up company, already established. We've obviously got very good licensing know-how, market know-how.
Mm-hmm.
We really saw it, I think, from both sides.
Mm-hmm.
That are extremely synergistic.
Sure.
That we could, as I say, take a business that's primarily European and really leapfrog them into the North American market.
I see. So does this take Spin then to the next level?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, we were, again, as you know, we were a startup initially.
Yep.
We started literally with a couple of people out of Reno, Nevada.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've grown up, we've grown into a sizable iGaming, you know, RGS supplier.
Right.
So this now gives us obviously a significant amount of resource.
Right.
Bragg is a publicly listed company both on the Toronto Exchange and on the NASDAQ. So it gives us capital, which as any startup, an early phase company, you know, we've always, you know, been somewhat limited on the capital side, so we can really invest within the business, you know, considerably in all facets of the business, sensibly, obviously.
Right. We're
not going to go and do anything silly, but you know, it's important that we're well capitalized, and exactly as you said, it can really take us to a new level.
And how long has Bragg been around?
So Bragg's been around for about 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, they're originally a private company, and then they listed on the Toronto Exchange, I believe it was early last year, and then listed on the NASDAQ about a month ago.
Okay, great.
So yeah, fairly, you know, young company, but have done a lot. So as I mentioned, they acquired Oryx Gaming. We're in the process of them acquiring Spin. And then they also acquired a company called Wild Streak, which is a content company. A gentleman by the name of Doug Fallon actually used to work for me at Aristocrat.
Okay.
many years ago, and he went out and started his own content company, doing both land-based and iGaming, I think about 5-6 years ago, and has done exceptionally well.
Okay.
He's very much switched on the content side. Mm-hmm. He's got the consistent number 3 game in New Jersey.
Okay.
In iGaming.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bragg also announced as part of that acquisition that he'd be the chief content officer.
Okay, great.
So he's managing all the content flow into the business.
Okay. So how's the first few months gone? Is it a smooth transition so far?
Yeah, so we're still in the closing phase. We right. don't. Mm-hmm. We won't close until towards the end of this year.
Okay.
In saying that, we've started to work together, the company's got a great team. The technology is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Their R&D capabilities are some of the best I've seen.
Right.
They've got some great value-added products. Like, we've got a product called a product engagement tool
right.
called Fuse, which is basically a promotional mm-hmm. tool that sits on top of a remote gaming okay. server. So you can essentially do marketing-driven promotions
okay.
that interface with the game, but it's not RNG-driven. Mm-hmm. It's very much promotion.
So can you incentivize individual players, or is it just a
absolutely
okay?
Yep, absolutely. So there's there's tournament boards, mm-hmm. there's different jackpots, there's right. a function called Quest,
okay,
where you can set up the first player to get 5 wilds right. in the next 10 mm-hmm. games wins a prize, and you do it across multiple games, and then has direct messaging. So it uses a lot of the sort of social
sure, right.
features on top of an RNG driven regulated
right.
RGS,
okay,
which really hits the mark in terms of where we're at mm-hmm. in the level of maturity
sure, right.
in North America. It's primarily just been a sort of content play and I'll call it a marketing spend play, which right. we've seen a lot
yeah,
from
sure.
a lot of the yes. operators, spending a lot of money on right. player acquisition, yep. etc.
Right.
Where this is really a tool that drives player engagement. So I say internally and to the Bragg Group, there couldn't be a better time to bring this type of product to the
yeah.
market.
Yeah.
So extremely excited about that. When you look at taking that and putting it on top of our content
mm-hmm.
and technology, I'm very bullish that we're going to be a significant player in mm-hmm. this market okay. moving forward.
Great.
Yeah.
So you just got your license in Connecticut.
Yep.
Which makes how many states and jurisdictions are you licensed?
So we're licensed in 5,
mm-hmm.
And that's including British Columbia.
Okay.
Connecticut was our 5th. So we've got New Jersey, okay. Michigan, Pennsylvania, British Columbia, and mm-hmm. now Connecticut.
Okay.
We're live in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Michigan, mm-hmm. hopefully going live in British Columbia Q1.
Okay.
And then depending on the timing of Connecticut, it'll either be later this year or early next year.
Okay.
And then we've also we're also being very aggressive about going after the Ontario
mm-hmm.
market.
Yeah.
So we're in the process of putting in an application there. That'll be our next one.
Sure.
We think that's going to be significant.
Yeah, market. I think so. Yeah.
So as you know, there's just been the lotteries, right. and then it's opening up. So, yeah. I mean, it's as you know, we were sort of one of the first into New Jersey in the very right, early yeah. days. A lot of people thought I was sort of mad at the time.
Yeah.
We sort of expected really what's happening now
mm-hmm.
to happen back then,
right?
Which it didn't, mm-hmm. So yeah, we sort of tic-tacked right. along the way. Yeah. But it's wonderful to see, the iGaming market finally,
sure, right?
Maturing. I think Michigan has been sure. outstanding for the industry, particularly the fact that it's been tribal mm-hmm. as well as commercial.
Right. Yes.
Really the first tribal mm-hmm. iGaming regulated market.
Right.
So again, I'm very bullish on that, mm-hmm. Roger, because sure. I think that can be the catalyst for more regulated tribal jurisdictions.
Right, yes.
Similar to what happened with Class 3, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That, we saw commercial and mm-hmm. then we saw tribal and then tribal became larger than commercial over time.
Sure, yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that, I've always been a strong believer that once tribal is successful in iGaming,
okay.
that'll be a catalyst for a lot more.
So your business is still B2B, though. You yep. license your games to the various operators.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct, yeah. So we have, our core business is what we call an RGS, the right. RGS mm-hmm. business, remote gaming server, right. that contains the content, holds mm-hmm. the content, plays the content. We integrate into PAMs like SG,
right. yeah.
GAN, and mm-hmm. SBTech, right. etc. And then that flows through to the operator.
Okay. Now, how does the operator decide what games to show to their customers?
So they look at a few different things. They look at your portfolio.
Right.
So how many games you've mm-hmm. got. They look at your performance if you're already on there. They look at the diversity in product,
mm-hmm.
Whether you're sort of a one-trick pony,
sure.
just five real video slots, or whether you've got table games or video poker or Keno.
Mm-hmm.
They also look at your technology to make sure that your technology is stable,
mm-hmm.
Whether you've got the ability to interface into the slot management, into the PAMs, into the internet mm-hmm. gaming systems.
Right.
Extremely important, the technology side in iGaming is on par, if not more, I don't know if important is the word, but more complex
mm-hmm.
than in land-based.
Sure.
As you know, I sort of came from the land-based
space
and brought companies to the market like Aristocrat, mm-hmm. where we had Australian protocols and we had to deal with different SaaS protocols and different systems.
Two and three wire things in those days.
Exactly. Right. Where this is, and that's complex, no question.
Yeah.
The iGaming space has another layer of complexity because we're dealing with iPhones, we're dealing with Androids.
Right. Yeah.
We had Apple come out and say we had to reconfigure the way that games operate on Apple apps.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a task that we had to take on with Agem, actually, and which was a great industry, I think, success story.
Sure, right.
Where we worked through that. But
everybody was terrified, though.
Terrified.
What was happening there,
because it's about 60% of the revenue.
Right, you're sure.
So, you know, and then we're dealing with different browsers. Mm-hmm. I guess what I'm saying is there's a whole sort of layer of other non-proprietary tech stacks that we have to deal with.
Sure.
That when you're in a land-based, you're in a closed environment. Mm-hmm, essentially, you're in a closed environment, closed platform, all that sort of stuff. So, to get back to your question, you know, for them to choose your games, your content, they need to know that you have the technology that has the ability to supply in the market, and it's not an easy thing. It really isn't. I learned from the school of hard knocks. Because. That was one of the benefits of getting in there early is that we had to deal with all these issues.
Yeah, and I my company was in there in the beginning. We learned from Hard Knocks as well. It's a difficult situation, but the fact that you were in there early, you kind of got all these things behind you now, and a lot of the companies that are getting here now haven't encountered that, you know?
Yeah. Look, there's significant, I call them barriers to entry.
Right.
You know, when I was at Aristocrat in the early days, I had a list. It was the barriers of entry list.
Right.
And, the list for iGaming, to come into the North American iGaming market is significant.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of regulatory requirements that, you know, I think it's fair to say a lot of European operators, aren't really aware of what's required in North America.
Right.
And that's not only from a regulatory perspective, but also from a technical compliance perspective. So, you know, we've got a lot of different requirements in DGE than in New Jersey compared to Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And then we have Michigan that's, GLI, but then they have their own nuances. So, and then there's, you know, different game requirements. So games that work in some markets don't necessarily work here. So we've learned a lot about all of those things along the way. And then there's the biggest one really is the integrations into the systems.
Right.
It takes a long time. There's a lot of testing. Mm-hmm. There's multiple parties that have to be a party to that.
Right.
And then you get sort of through that part. Then you've got to submit it to the labs and then you sort of start again.
Right.
My point is there's a lot of steps that you've got to go through to get into the market. So back to your original question, that was one of the things that I think was attractive to Bragg
Sure.
Is that we've done all that. We're already here. We're already operating. We've already got contracts with the biggest operators, DraftKings, FanDuel, et cetera. So,
Yeah, I spent a lot of time this summer in New Jersey, online going through, because I can't do it in Nevada.
Right.
We don't have online gaming here.
So I did
a lot of it in New Jersey, and you know, some of the amounts of games some of the sites offer is overwhelming. You know,
absolutely.
Just, you have to scroll through pages and pages of the regular screens, and then to find a game is sometimes it's difficult. Other operators only have a few games, that I guess they're the most popular games, right?
Sure, and we're seeing more of that.
Yeah.
So in the early days, it was very very much a volume game.
Right.
Every operator was just give me content because that was really the competitive advantage.
Right.
And you'd put a new game in the market, you'd see a peak because players want to try it. We're now at roughly 1,000 games, give or take a few, in New Jersey, right? Which is a lot, as you say.
Sure.
To scroll through every game is, it would take you days.
Yeah.
So a lot of the operators now are being a lot more selective. Mm-hmm. Once games fall off, they're starting to take them off the site, and they're being a lot more selective about what you're offering. As I say, it used to be, there was an undersupply. There was a high demand undersupply, where we're seeing a lot more supply. So they're being a lot more selective about what they choose.
So it's almost like the land-based slot machines, where a slot company would produce 100 games a year, and only 10 or 20 of them would land and stick,
For sure. Yeah. And look, it's no different. Right. We have life cycles. Right. We see games do really well out the gate. The only thing I'd say that is significantly different is that if a game is featured or a game is on a primary position on a site, that has a huge bearing on the performance of the game because it's the whole click-through.
Location.
No question. Yeah. And we definitely saw in land-based you'd have locations on the floor. Sure. That would perform a lot better.
Right.
This is that on steroids, right? Because if you're top left-hand corner, you've got a new exclusive featured tab across your icon.
Right.
You're going to get enormous play.
So who makes those decisions? The operators?
The operators make that decision.
And is it? I guess it's kind of based on a slot SEO type of thing, then, huh?
Yeah. Well, they look at a lot of different. Yeah. They look at a lot of different variables. We can contribute to that in our pricing models, in giving them exclusivities for a period of time that incentivizes them to put certain games in there. You'll see that a lot of suppliers have done customized products too, so a Golden Nugget video poker or a Golden Nugget stepper, and that's been extremely successful because that puts it at the forefront.
Right.
They use their brand. So you get cross-marketing, brand value, all that sort of stuff.
And they don't have to lease a brand from somebody else.
Exactly. Right. So, that's sort of a bit of give and take in terms of, what gets the premium positions. But a lot of the very smart operators, it's all about yield, right? Mm-hmm. It's about yield optimization.
Right.
So there's other pieces in there, there's hold percentages, there's minimum bets, there's a lot of pieces that come to play. That how do you get the best return, best yield out of that premium real estate.
Right. Okay.
So it's multi-dimensional.
So as a player, I really like the fact you can go into the information on the game and find out what the return to player is. You can't do that on the land basis. But again, a lot of that is dependent upon the math. A lot of games can come to that, but one game might be more volatile than another.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You said the key word there, Roger. You can have a very high RTP game, but it can be extremely high high in level of volatility. Mm-hmm. So, in other words, in the cycle, you might have one massive pay that outside of that pay, it might be running at 85%. It's not. I mean, you've always got to take that with a grain of salt.
Right.
That's sort of the art of.
Yeah.
Designing a great game.
I imagine that's almost exactly the same as a slot machine itself, is the math that behind it.
No question.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the, There's no, actually, in some jurisdictions, we've got to have any game that's land-based. Mm-hmm. It has to be the same math structure right. as it is in iGaming.
Right.
You know, we can't have...
Sure, right, exactly.
And actually, in some instances, they even call out social.
Yeah.
But if you've got that game right, on yeah, social, right, it yeah. has to have the same mm-hmm. high percentage as well, so... Which is a good thing.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
So what are some of the popular spin game products that have really worked for you guys?
So there's been a few. You know, the Incredible Technologies franchise that we've taken
right, sure. yeah.
to market of late has been exceptional.
Mm-hmm.
The other key category has been, we've worked with a company called Free Slots mm-hmm. in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
We've done the Ripley's oh, right. series. This okay. was with Olaf Vancouver.
Right. Yeah. Oh, really?
Actually. Okay. And well, that's
a blast from the past.
Yeah, yeah. And they've performed exceptionally yeah. well. We recently released some steppers that we did with Gary Harris.
Okay.
Who you may, yeah. may recall.
Sure.
And that as a category is doing mm-hmm. exceptionally well. We've yeah. I think as an industry we've been surprised.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got two games in particular, Get Hot and Star Chase.
Uh-huh.
That have done exceptionally well, continue okay. to. And I think that we're, somebody said to me yesterday, actually, I sort of, and it really resonated with me, that steppers in the US are very similar to fruit games
yeah,
in
right.
In Europe.
Right.
And because I've always been sort of a five reel video
sure, right.
guy,
yep.
that sort of really resonated with me because it's right. a good, very good, stable category of products. Mm-hmm. So they're doing very well mm-hmm. for us. So we're gonna continue to invest in the.
Okay.
In
the Peak family of top performing cabinets by IGT are a culmination of years of research and development, a passion leveraging both internal expertise and customer feedback. Results are a series of astounding cabinets that command attention with sleek modern features, ergonomically perfected curves, and bold design. Every aspect of the Peak cabinets have been scrutinized to ensure a comfortable gaming experience, resulting in exceptional performance you can bank on. Learn more at igt.com/peak. Now back to our podcast.
So I've noticed in my investigations in New Jersey, there's a lot of video poker that was branded spin games.
Yep. So that's been a great category for us right. also.
Mm-hmm.
We did the Video Poker Royale series where we did, you know, Jacks or Better, and we did the seven
right.
core video poker games. We were one of the first in there
mm-hmm.
with right. video poker.
Yeah.
That's done very well
sure.
for us. And yeah. it's very, you know, video poker is video poker.
Right. That's my favorite game. I don't play those live, but
yeah.
I love video poker.
Yeah.
You know, and you can see really good pay tables on online too that you can't find in a casino anymore, you know?
Exactly. And it's probably the most educated
yeah.
player.
Right, yeah.
That, you know, there's, as you say, except for looking at hold percentage on
right.
a slot, there's very few products that you can look at
right.
and say,
I know that I'm
going to get a good
yeah.
run on
right.
this
and
according to the scorecard,
yeah.
you know?
And I think people who know the games understand that, but there's got to be some suspicion that you can fool with it somehow, you know?
Yeah, well, no, you're right. Look, there's always that suspicion.
Right,
I
right.
think the
of course,
beauty...
you know, the commissions will never let you do that.
No, that's right. You know, so. And the, you know, I think that's been one of the great success stories of iGaming.
Right.
Has yeah. been that there's trust,
mm-hmm.
you
right.
know? I mean, I know that when we first went in, there was still a lot of grey/black mm-hmm. sites that players could go
right.
to.
Yep.
They didn't have to go through the KYC,
sure. right.
where they had to put in their social security number and
sure,
their
right.
credit card and all that.
Yeah.
But as we've seen over time, and I think it comes down to that key variable,
right.
is that people trust you know, a regulated gaming environment.
Right.
And I think New Jersey, to their credit, did an excellent job.
Yeah.
Being really the first casino,
sure.
I know that there was Nevada, Delaware prior,
yeah.
That really built that, and built
yeah.
that over time.
Sure.
And I think that we've seen that resonate, obviously, in Pennsylvania, Michigan.
Yeah, no question.
So
what other services do you provide to casinos? I mean, is it strictly just the content, or is there other things you do for them? Well, you mentioned the bonus thing that you...
Yeah, so currently... We're RGS
mm-hmm.
primarily. Where things are changing with the Bragg acquisition is that we're now bringing in Wild Streak content. We're bringing in content from third parties in Europe. In particular, three initially, Gamma Matt, Kalamba, and a group called Peter and Sons, that's been highly successful product in that category. And then we're expanding the spin. We're investing more in the spin side of the business for spin content. So that's one part. We're very much going to diversify our portfolio. We're going to do a lot more content. So our plan is to do about 60 games a year, 6-0, which is roughly one a week. Of those, 50% being built in-house between Spin and Wild Streak, and the other 50% third party. So beyond that, in terms of our focus in North America is, it's the RGS with content, and then it's the player engagement tool, which we're calling Fuse, which we're actually just launching at the show. Okay. So that's going to be our primary offering. Oryx also has a PAM, right? Also has an internet gaming system, as well as an aggregation layer. That I think they in Europe they operate about 100 RGSs through their aggregation layer. We've had a look at the PAM business. Jury's still out whether we'll go after that segment. As you know, there's in the top end of the operator sort of scale in North America, most of them have got their own PAMs. They've either acquired them or they've licensed them. So if you look at MGM, did the deal with GVC. DraftKings bought SB Tech. There's FanDuel that's got their own platform. Right. There's Rush Street that's got their own platform. So it's sort of outside of that, which they make up about 75% of the market in terms of dollars perspective. So there's really the other 25%, and of that other 25%, a lot of those have got their own PAMs as well. So if you sort of look at it in that that context, the pie isn't that large. And, quite frankly, it's a tough business. It's a low-margin business. You've got to invest significantly. Not to say that we're not going to do it, but we're definitely looking at all those variables. Our core focus is very much content, RGS, player engagement tools, have, 100% distribution across the market, which we're close to right now. Want to be at the front end of new markets. As you saw, we just did the Connecticut licensing. We're doing Ontario. If Massachusetts or Illinois goes iGaming Casino or Nevada goes iGaming Casino. Exactly. There's been a lot of water under the bridge there.
But
we're very much trying to keep at the forefront there also.
Great. So one of the things I noticed from the previous summer when I was in New Jersey to this summer is that there's a little bit of improvement on the casino side, but it's still really pretty much generic, I mean, the casino is very much like the other, do you think that, as it gets more competitive here, that each of the operators are going to try to make their casinos more unique and more individual so that you can go to one operator and say, they've got all these games that I can't find at this other operator? I mean, is that kind of competition you see coming down the road here?
Definitely. If you look at, and this has been announced publicly, DraftKings is developing their own content, as is MGM's got, I think, a couple hundred people in Europe that's developing their own
Penn
content. Penn National's doing it. They just bought the Score, so they're going to have both their own platform as well as their own content. So I think the short answer is yes, they're trying to differentiate themselves through having exclusive content, not only in-house built, but also bespoke through manufacturers. And I was actually, just before this meeting, I had a meeting with a large operator and who's been around for a long time. Yeah. And, his comments were, look, this is great to provide a point of difference, to provide a bit of a niche, but at the end of the day, you're still going to need, the billion, the hundreds of millions of dollars that are spent on R&D by content providers on the both the land-based side and the iGaming side, because I can't see you know, operators building the DNA that would allow them to go beyond, you know, having a niche set of content. I think there's categories like blackjack, for example, roulette, which makes a lot of sense because it's a very generic core product where, you know, the operators wouldn't necessarily have to pay as much royalties to to operators. I think that that makes a lot of sense, and they can brand it and all that sort of thing to give them a point of difference. But yeah, I think that if you combine that with technology that a lot of them are buying, as we just said, SB Tech, classic example, the Score, etc., as well as player engagement tools, they're really the three areas I think that they'll be able to differentiate themselves. Not to mention, obviously, the dollars that they spend on marketing. But in terms of core product, I think it really sits within those three categories.
I think the big missing piece right now is the player engagement right now, because, you know, I signed up for, you know, half a dozen casinos, and I get maybe an email every once in a while. You know?
Right.
But, you know, I don't get recognized on a you know, for example, with the Resorts World opening now. I was talking to Scott Sabella, and he was saying, you know, all the ways they can engage with their players, which that's what should be happening online.
Absolutely.
You know, as much as it is in the land-based.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that, you know, we're seeing... you know, land-based operators that have done very well and have learnt over decades.
Right.
You know, I think MGM, to their credit, you know, in Michigan, did a great job in terms of capitalising on their database. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen Golden Nugget obviously do it. DraftKings has done it with their, in particular, their fantasy database. So, yeah, I think that there can be a lot learnt, to your point, Roger, from, you know, those decades and decades of years of learning what to do and the best way to do it.
Let's talk about the spread of iGaming. You know, obviously, sports betting has made Americans comfortable with making bets on their mobile devices. So, you know, it's going to be an easier transition. And I've talked to people like Richard Schwartz from RSI that they were surprised how many people transitioned from their sports betting site to their casino site. So, obviously, you know, it makes it easier for them. So, do you think that we're going to see many more states come on to legalize iGaming along with sports betting?
I do. You know, again, like what I was saying before, I think that every time we've had a new jurisdiction and it's been successful, I think that adds to the sort of snowball effect. And as we said, you know, I think with tribal, I really see that as a big catalyst. Yeah. And to your point, Roger, I think that from a technology / regulatory, you know, mobile approval perspective, sports betting ticks all those boxes. To go from sports betting to iGaming is not a big lift in terms of the regulatory framework. Do you know what I'm saying?
Sure,
in terms
of
getting it approved.
It's the same kind of thing.
It is. It's I think there's a bit of a just misconception out there that you know, that iGaming is a lot more complex and, you know, you're betting on a casino rather than, but it's all exactly the same stuff. You know, you've still got all the geofencing, you've got KYC to get credit, all that sort of stuff. So I think that, again, as we see more and more jurisdictions open up and are successful and are trusted and are doing the right thing by the customer, that you know, more and more legislatures are going to feel confident. And as they learn from sports betting that it is the same framework, that we'll see a lot more. And I think if you look at margin and you look at you know, potential tax dollars, on a part-to-part basis, because the hold on sports betting is very, very slim, and there's a lot of, obviously, you know, investment that's required. iGaming, and I'm obviously biased,
of course,
but I think iGaming is a model, you know, purely from a financial perspective, you know, wins out in my opinion.
Yeah, and I think once you tell the legislatures they're going to make a lot more tax money from iGaming than sports betting, that'll clinch the deal.
Exactly. And look, at the end of the day, that's
what they're looking for.
Yeah, and they want to protect their players and all that sort of stuff, which we can do Yeah, we've shown that we can do that.
Where everybody complains about Pennsylvania with their high tax rates there, and you just have to realize the legislatures are looking for the most money they can get. You know?
Exactly.
So, yeah. Once you wrap your head around that, okay, we'll work with it then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, we operate in Pennsylvania.
Sure, right.
Yeah. Look, you just learn to operate within that environment. Right, I'm not saying that new markets should necessarily have a high tax rate like that.
I think
if you look at models like Michigan and New Jersey, it's worked exceptionally well for everybody. Sure, right, so exactly, I think that's sort of a win-win.
So one more question, what's the future hold for Bragg and Spin Gaming?
I think that we're extremely well positioned to be a significant player in this market. As I say, we've got the technology, we've got the content, we've got the know-how. All I see is upside. Mm-hmm. I think that, we're very fortunate to, as I say, be very well capitalized. I think that myself and the management team know really what we need to do to be a significant player in this market. Mm-hmm. And I'm extremely confident that we're going to do that.
Yeah.
We just need to execute to plan, and we've got all the pieces in place.
Sure, right.
And, for me, it's very exciting. I sort of feel like I was in the early Aristocrat days where, I can see sort of what we can do and how we can get there, that sort of floats my boat. So,
absolutely.
I'm personally very engaged with that.
Well, you've always been very entrepreneurial, and I'm sure this is stoking that flame as well.
So. Yeah, no, it is, Roger. Right. It is. Yeah.
Well, thanks for taking the time to meet with us. We're real excited for you for the success you've made so far, and we're going to follow you through the whole routine here, because I think there's a big future for Bragg after this acquisition.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Roger. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure, mate.
And our viewers, thanks for joining us, Eric. This is not the end of the road. Don't you see? It's real. Take you where you really need to be. Oh. Hope you enjoyed this week's GGB podcast, brought to you by IGT's Peak family of cabinets, performance driven and player tested across the board. To learn more, visit IGT.com/peak. To learn more about online games and how they are delivered to the operators and the players, visit ggbmagazine.com. For all the news of the gaming industry delivered to your desktop every Monday morning, sign up for free at GGB News by using the code GGB180. And don't miss a single episode of the podcast. Subscribe on Apple or Spotify today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB Podcast.